Good morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, how are you doing today?
Oh, warm, warm, warm.
Absolutely.
Loving the weather.
Sounds like we're headed for potential triple digits, it looks like out there.
Right around that today, and then Sunday and Monday, they're talking 102 to 103.
Yeah.
And then back into the 80s.
Back into the barn burning time. I guess, officially, it is June, so, you know, we can expect that. We don't always kind of see that until sometimes into July, but they're going to give us a little taste of that summer. We have with us in-house our resident lending expert, Mr. Tom Coyne. Tom, how are you doing?
You know, fantastic. I'm loving this beautiful weather as well. And yeah, excited for the weekend, Lance.
Absolutely. I've noticed my grass, though. I have to mow it twice a week now. That once a week program isn't working for me anymore.
I just had to readjust. I thought I had it all dialed in, but I started seeing some dry spots, and I got these darn gophers that are popping up.
Oh. Yep. Too much. For me, it was too much fertilizer and water in that twice a week deal. Yeah.
This one gopher, he kept popping his dirt pile up in the middle of my yard. And I, you know, I'm pretty good at catching these little guys. And I swear, I dig this hole trying to find his little tunnel three or four times. And I'm thinking, well, maybe he left. And I fill it back up, and boom, he pops back up.
You're caddyshacking it out there.
But I got him. But now I have a big dirt spot in the middle of my grass. So.
Oh, yep. I've fought that fight, my friend. I have fought that fight before. So,
Your gopher.
Absolutely. Well, we always like to start off with our crazy national property of the week. This one coming out of Zillow.com. Always interesting when I look and see houses like this, and the headline was a 216-year-old Bridgehampton estate. That's an old house. Mm-hmm. I mean, 216 years old. So originally built in 1800, they updated and expanded this estate. But in that area in New York there, you're looking at it is 6 bedrooms, 4.5 baths, but it is on a 3-acre estate. And as you can imagine, property's a little bit valuable up there.
Well, hopefully it's been remodeled a little bit.
It did say that there has been some updates and stuff, though. They did kind of keep that original Cape Cod style siding. And it has the original old plank wood flooring. A lot of the rooms have personal fireplaces back then. A lot more fireplaces. That was your heating source.
I hope they redid the plumbing.
Yeah. I think that's probably been redone at some point. And the current family has actually owned it since 1945.
Wow.
That baby on the market at just under a slight $8 million.
Imagine telling your kids, like, okay, brush your teeth, go get your firewood, and go to bed.
Absolutely. Little bit different time. So interesting to see places like that. I think the oldest home I have sold before was a 1908, years ago. That was probably the oldest one I have sold before. So a little different.
I'll be interested in like 50 years. We got all these neighborhoods that are new now. But in 50 years, do people start tearing down and building new? Or, you know, how long do these houses last?
So, yeah. You look at our building materials and what we're doing, and that is a very interesting thing to keep an eye on and look at. Now, our local real estate story, this is kind of a combination, a hybrid story, but has huge local implications. So I always like to kind of take our national story and then kind of temper it with a local real estate story. So it's always fun to get a little validation. Tom and I are on the air. We're talking about what's going on in the local market. We've done a lot of shows on lower inventory and how fast the market's moving. So Realtor.com just released from last month data, online data for number of listing views on Realtor.com, along with median days on the market for those markets. And they released the top 20 real estate markets, medium to large metro markets in the nation. Now, this list is really interesting to read through. And there's some things on this list that usually are different than the others. So, California, huge rebound again right now. So the top 20 markets, I'm going to read off some. San Francisco, number 2. Denver, number 3. Santa Rosa, California. Stockton, California. Texas made the list. Very good rebounds there. Dallas. And then right back into California. It's crazy. Sacramento, San Diego, San Jose. Up, up, up. And then you come to number 12. And you see just a little... Kennewick, Washington.
Really?
How yeah.
about that?
On the list, number 12 on the list.
And these are most views in each of these markets?
So the way that they, the way that this particular study came up with the top 20 markets, busiest and most in-demand markets to watch, is they used the number of listing views that happened on Realtor.com, and then they associated that also with the median days on the market. Mm. And as we've talked about around here, we've talked about property being in multiple offers, you know, selling in 1 day or 0 days on the market with 3 or 4 offers. All of that has contributed to us being on that list of the top 20.
So I'd assume that we're not the only market having the type of activity that we're having.
Absolutely. Right? When you look at the ones that rounded out the top 20, you had Colorado Springs, Fort Wayne, Indiana, Santa Cruz, California, Eureka, California, Boston, Modesto, and then it was interesting, Detroit was actually a little comeback there and on the market, and then Raleigh, North Carolina. So it's so funny to look at a list like that. In fact, I sent it to some of my real estate buddies that I see at the national conferences and stuff we go at, and I was like, see, Kennewick, we do exist. Because they never know exactly where we're at. So always interesting to see a list like that and then coordinate that with what we felt has been going on in our local market. As we looked at that, one of the things Tom and I wanted to talk about that sometimes makes it a little bit more difficult in a hot market, but also attracts a lot of attention. When we start getting back on national lists like that and getting exposure like that on a national level, what happens is we get a lot of investors that are back in the market and looking in the Tri-Cities again. So one of the things we wanted to talk about today is a little bit about some of the pros and cons and what to look at when you're looking at owning and operating investment property and rentals. This is a subject that is obviously, you know, very near and dear to Tom and I's heart. We both own numerous rentals, and so not only do we help clients make those decisions, but we also do that ourselves. And then also we have a separate brokerage, Kenmore Team Property Management, where we manage those rentals for landlords and for investors. So very unique perspective when we have a lot of different angles that we help on that side. So we can help with the sales expertise when purchasing or selling, and then also help with the management of the rental. So there's a couple factors that I always write down when I take people through this exercise when they're ready to own and operate an investment property and when we start looking. And one of the things that happens is looking at costs, you know, and that's the hidden cost, because a lot of times people will do out some numbers on paper and they'll say, gosh, this just looks great. You know, I can get, you know, $1,700 a month rent, and I can buy this property for $180,000, and I'm in a cash flow and everything's going to be fantastic. Well, one of the things we have to look at is condition of property. And that is the number one thing that I wrote down. And when you're looking at purchasing these properties and going through this exercise, that is being realistic about the home inspection. A lot of times you'll get a home inspection back, or maybe you didn't even get a chance to do a home inspection. Maybe you bought something at a foreclosure auction or bought it through a method where you weren't able to fully look at the property. In those instances, you have to even be more vigilant about what the potential costs are. So one of the things we always evaluate are some of the big factors. What does the roof look like? What is the longevity of that roof? Another factor that we're looking at on those home inspections when we're looking at those investment properties is heating and air, because those are big ticket items where if you have an issue with your heating and air system, we could be looking at $5,000 to $7,000 of getting that replaced. So you have to have enough reserves built up or have enough reserves in savings savings going into that, that you're able to handle that. Because let me tell you, here we are to, you know, later today, tomorrow, 102 degrees. And if you have a rental house and it's 102 degrees and that AC unit goes out, let me tell you how quick it is going to be before you have a call.
Immediately.
And that is just exasperated right now in this time of year. So that's going to be something where you don't have a choice. I mean, if that comes up, you're going to have to get that handled for your tenant, or you're going to lose that tenant and then potentially have other vacancy factor costs into it. The second thing that I wrote down on the analysis, and we have been very, very fortunate here in Tri-Cities, where over the last 5 to 7 years, we've ran at what we call a vacancy factor of how often are those apartments and those houses vacant. And we've been running for the last 5 to 7 years at vacancy factors as low as, and it's expressed as a percentage, as low as 2 to 4%. So that means 96% of the time that property is filled. So it's not as big of a deal in the market we've had with a lot of people moving to our area. But in your financial calculations, you need to look at what that vacancy factor is. So for instance, let's say you budget out a certain amount of cash flow. You have $200 per month. Let's say on a rental that is just $1,000 per month. So the problem is you're getting $200 per month cash flow, and you have a rental that's running for $1,000 per month. Well, if that's vacant for 1 month, you're going to eat up 5 months of cash flow. And vacancies can happen for numerous reasons. People have lifestyle changes. Maybe a renter purchases a house. And so coordinating that to have zero vacancies, sometimes you can do it, but that is always what I call a gift. A lot of times you might have somebody that moves out on the 7th, and then by the time you get a new renter, it is the 1st before the new renter has moved in. So you have that vacancy factor that you have to calculate in. A lot of times we tell people to use a calculation of 85 to 90%, and then that will give you that safety, kind of that edge and cushion that you need. And that's just one of those things that a lot of times new investors don't look at. You know, when they do their calculations, they're like, oh, I'm going to have rent of $1,000 for 12 months. That's $12,000. And then they do out their, you know, we call it a pro forma, where they're looking at how this thing is, this property is going to perform. If you don't have that vacancy factor in it, it could be a real shocker. And you're going to need that cash flow to build up your reserves in case you have any of the big improvements that we talked about. Now, the other one of the ways that you can really help with that is through proper screening of tenants. So we're going to talk a little bit about that when we come back from the break. And that is, how can I make sure, what type of factors am I using? Who's managing screening my tenants so that I know that I'm getting the type of renter that I want in there? Because one of the things we'll talk about after the break is the horror stories that sometimes people say prevent them from having rentals. And so we'll talk about some of the steps you can take to avoid that. And then we'll look a little bit into financing these properties. What does that look like when we're going to purchase these investment properties?
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. Today we've been talking a little bit about owning and operating investment properties and rentals. So at the last segment, one of the things we talked about is that the California market was rebounding very rapidly. 14 of the top 20 markets that we were seeing were in that California area. One of the things that happens in that instance is we start to compete with some out-of-town investors. We start to get investors showing up because they've sold properties in California. They're bringing equity from those markets and sometimes moving them to the next hot market. And lo and behold, on that list, we see Kennewick, Washington in there. And what happens is you start to get people looking at those lists and making those decisions and saying, oh, maybe this is the next place where I'm going to be able to get equity and appreciation and a good spot to have rentals. So interesting times, and we've seen over the course of the last 2 to 3 years some appreciation rates like we have never seen before here in Tri-Cities on certain price ranges. So it's interesting to talk about maybe owning and operating investment properties. Tom, I know on the lending side, there's some differences here that if no one's ever done, if someone hasn't done this before, that they need to look out for.
Yeah, you know, there absolutely is some differences with investment properties and owner-occupied properties, so let's go through it. But in my opinion, owning rentals is probably one of the, in my opinion, and especially in Tri-Cities, one of the safest ways to build long-term wealth. And if you really crack down the numbers and look at your potential return on your investment, it might be a solid way to build immediate cash flow. Let's say you put $50,000 down on a house and you're cash flowing $500 a month, which is completely doable in our market. That's a return of 12% on your money. And if you look at your investments or your 401k or your savings account is 0.1 probably, 12% is amazing. Now, of course, you have to, like Lance was saying before the break, factor in unexpected expenses or vacancy. But let's say it's rented for 12 months, you made 12% on your money. So it could be a really good way to build some additional income for yourself. Now, for those who don't need cash flow right now, maybe you have a job and you're able to pay your bills, consider putting those on a 15-year loan, and you're still going to probably cash flow a little bit and stick that extra money on the mortgage. But if you get it to where you're not making any money now, everything's going back to the mortgage. Let's say you have 5-6 properties, and in 15 years, they're all paid off, and they're all making you $1,500 a month at that point. Retiring young is a very real possibility. Now, it may not always be like this. We're kind of in a unique time because rates are so low. But if rates go up 5, 6, 7%, which is possible, you know, nobody knows, these cash flows aren't going to be here. Now, you may still be able to break even and real estate will still be a good investment, but it's a unique time we're all in. So I would definitely look at your portfolio and make sure you're diversified. Have some stuff in your mutual funds and your 401k and your stocks, and consider throwing real estate into the mix because it could be a really good way to diversify and balance out your portfolio for retirement. Now, on a conventional loan, you need 15% down on a single family house. But at 15% down, you're going to have a pretty high rate and high mortgage insurance. So I always recommend trying to get to at least 20% down. Now, if you get to 25% down, your rate improves even more. On a 2-4 unit property, you're going to need 25% down. Now, anything over 4 units is considered commercial, so I don't deal in that realm, but we know some guys who do if you're looking for larger apartment complexes. But let's say you're going to live in the house. Maybe you don't own a home and you're going to buy your first house and you're looking at a duplex or maybe even a fourplex. You can go FHA with that with just 3.5% down. Great way to get into a rental and get that started is buy it, live in one of the units, and rent out the other. And maybe that one other unit is paying for the entire house payment. So good, safe investment there. Now, different ways to come up with the down payment, because a lot of people hear these huge numbers and say, well, it's just not possible. Look at your primary residence. Do you have enough equity? Maybe take a home equity loan out, or maybe do a cash out, refinance that property and utilize that equity you've built in your primary residence and put it to work for you on a rental property. Or look at your 401k. I look at like real estate and 401k all in the same umbrella. It's part of my personal retirement portfolio. So if I'm using one of my retirement accounts to help fund another, especially when I look at my returns in my retirement account right now, it's not good, then I probably can make more money on utilizing some of that to get an investment property. So consider that. Now, you're going to have to talk to your 401k provider and see what your options are there, and definitely look at your tax benefits with your or tax implications with your accountant to see if it makes sense. Good old-fashioned way, saving up money, or converting your current primary residence to a rental. Now, that's how a lot of people get started, because they just don't have the means to come up with 20%. So let's say they buy a $150,000 house as the home they're going to live in. They live in for a year. They convert it to a rental. They buy a $175,000 house. They live in it for a year. Convert it to a rental. Buy a $200,000 house. As long as you keep moving up like that, you can keep converting those to rental properties. And owner-occupied properties, you can get in with 3.5% or 5% down, depending on the program. So like I said, unique time right now. Rates are incredibly low. we have a very affordable market. You know, I talk to friends that are up in Seattle, and owning rentals is, it's not even an option. It doesn't make sense. Like, financially, they just couldn't afford coming up with $100,000 down on a $500,000 house. So, yeah, consider it. And, you know, Lance, like you said, Lance, both you and I live this and very passionate about it. And I think it's a great idea for people.
Tom, I appreciate that information. And, like, that perspective, when you've done it yourself, it always makes a big, big difference. It's interesting, too. I think people are a little bit surprised at the rental market, too, and what it's been doing. I printed off some real-life scenarios of some rents recently. So we had some properties, some newer properties that we were managing for an investor over in Pasco. We had one over in the Three Rivers subdivision in West Pasco over there. The three-bedroom, two-baths over there are now going from between $1,295 to $1,395. Mm. And so just a year and a half, 2 years ago, those rates were much different. There's four-bedroom, two-baths over there that are going for $1,895. And ooh, so those rates have increased quite a bit on some of those properties. A lot of people that, another thing to look at, a lot of people that have been managing rentals themselves for five, six, 7 years. We talk to a lot of clients that say, gosh, you know what? I've been managing my own properties for the last 7 to 8 years, but I don't, I'm ready to travel more. I have retired. So they went through the scenario that Tom said exactly. And this is one of the reasons why we run the property management company, where they had a job, they bought these rentals, they put them on 15-year mortgages. Here we are at the end of 15. And they're like, you know what? I think I want to go to Florida for a little while. Mm-hmm. I think I want to go down to the coast. So they've come to us recently and they've said, I know it costs for property management and you have a fee structure there based on percentages of rents, but let's look at that. And for some of our clients, what we've been able to do, because the rates have gone up and they weren't current on what those rates are, we've been able to start managing the properties for the clients so they have the ability to travel, increase the rental rates to a market rate that they're supposed to be at, and cover their property management costs so their cash flow hasn't changed at all. And, now they don't have the headache anymore of managing those. So there's a lot of options out there. If you're curious at all about what those rental rates look like or talking to us, go to KenmoreTeamPropertyManagement.com or go to KenmoreTeam.com. Shoot us a message. We'll get it to the right person to take a look at that. But it is a very, very interesting time. And for landlords and investors, there's a lot of options right now that weren't there a year ago. Another point that I wrote down with that sometimes people overlook, and some of this can be solved with professional property management, but I always put down scheduled time to do visual checks on the property. This is one of the biggest things. Even if you're with a property management company, even if you're with us, I always encourage our investors to have a time in your schedule that you just say, I'm going to drive by the property and just check it out. And because what happens is out of sight, out of mind. You know, sometimes you turn something over to a property management company and your checks are coming in and you just forget about it, right? The checks are showing up every month and maybe you do want to forget about it. But a little reminder, a little note in there that says, you know, comes up on your calendar and says, you know, I'm going to take 20 extra minutes on the way into work and I'm going to drive by the property that I own over there in West Pasco. The reason I say this is because a lot of things can be prevented by these checks. All of a sudden you go over there and you check and you notice and you're like, oh, that's interesting. They had two cars, but now there's seven cars on the property. And they're, you know, what's going on? What's that an indication of? Geez, have some other people moved in that I didn't know about, etc. Or you drive by the property and you might say, gosh, you know, the lawn looks okay, but it's not how I kept it. And maybe it'll never be exactly how you kept it if you had used it as your residence before. But maybe there's some burn spots starting to show up. And before you lose that grass and have to resod an entire lawn, you could put in a call to a landscaper or the property manager and fix some of those issues. We've had everything from people driving by and somebody's working in the yard and you're like, who's that? And you stop and talk to them and they're like, oh yeah, the gal that used to live, she moved out 4 months ago, and I've just been paying the rent to her, you know, or 3 months ago, and I've just been paying the rent to her, and she's been paying. Not allowed, right?
Right.
And that person needs a new lease. And so a lot of these things sometimes will not be found out unless you're doing those inspections. So that's one of my biggest ones, is just scheduling that time to swing through, drive by, and a lot of times those checks. Sometimes you have a no pet policy, and you drive by, and you'll be surprised. You'll see a dog jumping up over the back of the fence, you know, barking at you. And so these are the type of things that can really, really help with that.
Must be a big dog.
Yeah, there can be. I've seen some big ones before. I've also seen some little ones that I wasn't happy about before either. We've seen it. If it's happened, we've probably seen it and dealt with it. And then the very last thing that I put down here is really getting with your other professionals, getting with your attorney, getting with your CPA. Tom mentioned this briefly in his segment, but just saying, what are the tax benefits, if any? Maybe there's not, but for me personally, because it's different for everybody's situation, and your CPA can say, what are the tax benefits if I have this property? If I have this additional $8,000 cash flow and I have these expenses, what do the tax benefits look like for me on that property? Because sometimes it's not just about the cash flow. Sometimes it actually can increase more than your spreadsheet says, because there might be some tax benefits that you're gaining that actually make that return on investment in that number that Tom was talking about a little bit larger than just that number. So those are some of the big points that we're always looking out for with the investment properties. Inventory, I know we talk about it being light, and so I wanted to quickly just get out there a pick three. We do have some amazing new inventory. And just a real quick description. Pick number one, I've got over in Richland, South Richland location, 450 Cherry Blossom Loop. This is an amazing custom home, 4-bedroom, 3-bath, plus a den, 3,200 square feet. You've got absolutely everything. You've got tiger wood floors, inlaid designs, everything in the gourmet kitchen, granite, full tile backsplash, stainless steel appliances. I mean, this is absolutely parade style quality home, and that's coming in that South Richland range at $465,000. Pick number two, a little bit more rural type property, 220 Main Street in Burbank. This is a 3-bedroom, 2-bath Rambler with a shop. So you've got an absolutely fantastic property. You get the shop, you get new laminate wood flooring and wood stove in the living room, new exterior paint, updated counters, lots of storage. So this is a nice property. That shop has 14-foot bay door, 16-foot ceilings, and that's priced at $189,900. And then pick number three, I expect this one to go quick also. This is a 3-bed, 2-bath Rambler out in West Pasco. It's 1726 square feet. It kind of hits right in that rental investment property that we've been talking about today. Open concept, large formal living room, and that property with fully fenced backyard is coming in right at $190,000. So some great inventory coming up. It's still tight out there, but with the summer, we're getting some more listings now that people are thinking the kids are out of school. I can handle these showings, get some properties on the market. If you want to sell during these summer months, go to KenmoreTeam.com and get a hold of us. And if you're interested in looking at what these investment properties look like and financing those, get a hold of us. We'll get you over to Tom. We can figure out the lending side. Tom, how can people get a hold of you?
TomCoinHomeLoans.com or 783-7300.
And hit KenmoreTeam.com if you missed any of that. And we will be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.